Ah, yes, the sweltering Big Apple today. Second day of some high and nasty humid humidity here in New York City. But it's always fun this time of year to walk around and see the young future of America putting on caps and gowns. Saw a few people today on the subway heading to graduations. Hopefully they're inside. And I actually had the pleasure to see my oldest, who is very young, graduate from pre-K yesterday. It was one of the cutest things my wife and I have ever witnessed. He sang a song impeccably, very posed, held a microphone, perfectly positioned, didn't overmodulate. It's almost like he has a father in broadcasting. And I tell you what, I gave him no preparation, no training. This was all a surprise. He kept it a big surprise for me. And I couldn't have been any prouder. So congratulations to all the 2014 graduates. You are called the Boomerang Generation. Actually, the Boomerang Generation is something that's getting a lot of press because, unfortunately, you're graduating with a lot of debt and moving back home. Percentages are 3 in 10. 3 in 10 are moving back home. So they're coming back full circle because they can't get a job. So hopefully the 2014 college graduates will prove differently and change those stats. Well, of course, World Cup fever is still in high mode. If you love the World Cup, you know, I really am into it this year. You know, every 4 years, so I guess it's something you really long for. There are a lot of upsets, which is pretty common in the World Cup because what happens is, I don't know exactly. You know, I thought I had a concrete idea of what really happens, but I know historically a lot of upsets happen. And the deal is that it makes the cup very interesting. And I understand that, you know, who you think is going to, like Italy's out, you know, or is it Spain? I forget. I think Spain. Sorry, I'm not close watching it that closely. But it's quite interesting to see how it all pans out. You know, that's the deal. And that's the nice part about the World Cup. And if you love the World Cup, I mean really love it, or want to use it for love, maybe you heard about this, you can fall in love with one particular piece of World Cup merchandise. That's turning heads. An intended pun. There's an official condom of the World Cup. It's yellow and green in support of course, the home country, host country, Brazil. Slightly resembling a squash of some sort. And it's, I don't know this from experience, by all means, it's flavored, according to intimate sources. A flavored squash-looking World Cup condom. Not much to say after that. And I guess there is, actually, because we haven't gotten to the taste aspect. Maybe pushing the envelope a little bit too far here. And the condoms taste like Brazil's national cocktail, which is a caipirinha. Caipirinha? Maybe the pronunciation is somewhat close. Caipirinha. A mixture of sugar, lime, and white rum. Now, that sounds good. But I'm going to tell them to keep the condom on the side there. It gives a whole new meaning to certainly a goal, that's for sure. Maybe that's why they ban the horn, you know, the vuvuzela. I want you to come live on the air, Giselle, who's my engineer here, and give me the proper pronunciation of that horn. Giselle's not listening. Giselle's busy dealing with a technical issue. But maybe that's why they don't have a horn. It's banned in this series of the World Cup 2014 because maybe too many people would get the creative idea to strap one of those condoms, the official World Cup condom, onto one of those horns and would have a lot of fun with that. I imagine it would make great content for TV, for cable channels, of course. I think it would be hysterical. But I think it loses a lot, actually, without those horns. Because I think those horns actually began in South Africa. Very, very popular. I love the sound of it. So Starbucks is doing a pretty cool thing. They are raising their prices. Well, that's not the cool part. Maybe they're doing the price increase because they are giving their full-time employees tuition reimbursement. So the interesting thing, I was saying to myself, okay, well, if you're going to put these employees, these baristas, through college, what do you have to gain? They're going to come back and leave because why are they going to work? Now, I'm not knocking working at Starbucks with a college education. You know, God knows there are so many people working in many, many different levels of retail with graduate degrees, MBAs, et cetera. You have to do what you have to do to pay the bills to make ends meet, and I understand that. But chances are, though, if you are going to put yourself through school, and it's probably going to be a part-time thing, by the time you graduate, you are going to put Starbucks as far back in your past, in your rearview mirror, as quickly as possible. But it's a great PR move on Starbucks' behalf. I think it's a brilliant move because, I mean, it just really validates how they take care of their employees, which is a good thing. And if you're a soda drinker, they're announcing two new soda drinks they're making, especially in the afternoon, because that's when business dies down. So they're introducing two new soda drinks, of course, with a price increase across the board with everything else. So do you play the guitar? Air guitar. Do you wish you played a guitar? All right, attention shredders. Shredders, shredders, shredders everywhere. And we're not talking like Enrons of the world. We're talking about real guitar players. If you can swing the axe and really make it sound good. The Second Amendment guarantees you, of course, the right to bear arms. But what about axes? That's what I'm thinking about, as in guitars. Well, on July 4th in Dallas, residents will hold the first ever open carry guitar rally. Get it? Open carry guitar rally. There's a lot of people, and surprisingly, in Dallas, who are against the open carry gun ability. Right. That's pretty cool. So it's a open carry gun rally, and they're really kind of disenchanted with the way, you know, this has gotten out of hand. Guitar owners will congregate in public to do the most patriotic act of all, one of them, I should say, rocking out. Now, the idea is meant to satirize the gun owners who believe that carrying large firearms or any firearm into, McDonald's, Chipotle, any restaurant of that nature is a good way to raise awareness about their Second Amendment, which obviously they're making fun of because they're going to be walking in with guitars strapped across their belts and around their shoulders. Now, it's a brainchild of a Vietnam vet named Barry Kuda, a very cool dude. He actually is a guitar player, a major guitar player, and he actually opened for the Sex Pistols years ago. So not only is this guy cool, fought for our country, and played prior open for the Sex Pistols, he's doing a great thing, opening people's eyes about the open carry law and making fun of it and making people think twice about it. He's 61 years old, and he's totally into this. The idea, quote unquote from Coda, the idea of desensitizing people to the sight of someone walking into a fast food restaurant with an automatic rifle is not good. One should feel alarm. It's a proper response in such situations, end quote. Very well put. I mean, that's how I would feel. Thankfully, around here, we don't have that open carry law. Because could you imagine going in to get a latte, a Big Mac, Chipotle, what do they have, tacos there, burritos, and the guy next to you or in front of you or the woman in front of you has a dual pistol strapped to her waist? I tell you, the time I see that, I'm going to question where I live and have to rethink things. Yeah. Well, it made me think about other things that had been in the works for quite some time, for over a decade. Smart guns. Have you heard of smart guns? It actually sounds like an oxymoron, like jumbo shrimp. New Jersey law is keeping smart guns off shelves nationwide. And a smart gun is a gun that fires only in the hands of its owners. It isn't science fiction anymore. It sounds like it, you know. It's a so-called smart gun, and they're on sale. They have been on sale in Europe for quite some time, but you can't find one in store shelves in this country yet. And this is why. In part, because of an obscure New Jersey law. Believe it or not, it's a New Jersey law that's had unintended consequences for the rest of the nation. So essentially, like, remember the childproof handgun law in 2002 that says something like personalized handguns are available? Once they are available, I should say, anywhere in the country, all handguns sold in New Jersey must be smart guns within 30 months. Aha. So that's why they're not selling smart guns, because do you know how many Smith and Wessons that are, I'll call them dumb guns? They will lose tens and tens of millions and millions of dollars. So that's why the smart guns are not sitting on shelves. They're not being sold. So the goal, of course, of this law was to spur research and development and manufacturing, smart guns, according to its sponsor, New Jersey State Senator Loretta Weinberg. But in practice, the supporters and critics of the law now agree that not has been done in this area. And Rutgers is actually working on a prototype with another fine institution, which slips my mind right now, about creating a smart gun. Now, a few of the gun retailers have tried recently. One shop in California and another in Maryland announced they would stock the one of the guns, smart guns, called a Armatex IP1. I have no gun acumen whatsoever, so pardon me. Of course, it's a German-made gun, so it's got to be really good. We'll never jam on you, right? And it only fires if the owner is wearing a special watch. Now, this makes perfect sense to me, if guns make sense at all. You wear a special watch, so only that person can hold that firearm and trigger it. Interestingly, the firearm industry has not really been opposed to the research and development of this technology. And that's really uncharacteristic of them to be quiet, especially the NRA. Quiet? Can't be so. I mean, you know, they have a comment about everything, especially everything they deny. So, by the way, I don't think I introduced myself today until you listen to PRN.FM. My name is Mark Farrell. It is still very hot in New York City today, and we're broadcasting on the Upper West Side on the Progressive Radio Network. Thank you so much for joining me today, and every Thursday morning, love to broadcast with you, no matter where you're listening to, New York, West Coast, Europe, Scandinavia, we love you. Love to hear from you as well, 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888, PRN.FM, PRN.FM, for any emails or questions you'd like to send my way, please do so. So, yeah, so not much progress on the gun front and gun control, but, you know, I got some exceptional news that can benefit, you know, possibly millions of people in the United States. There are 54 million people, persons with disabilities in the United States, and that runs the gamut in terms of disabilities. But so last week, actually a week ago today, a major milestone for people with disabilities was reached. New Jersey Governor Chris Christie signed into law a week ago that New Jersey schools are now required, I think this is actually going to take place in 2016, so not currently now, but moving forward in the future, now required to allow students with disabilities to sign up for and take part in extracurricular sports programs. That is great news. That is phenomenal. When I heard this, I was over the moon. I mean, how long have we been working towards something like this? The governor said, quote, "Everybody should have the chance to play school sports," end quote. Couldn't agree more. Christie said he learned valuable lessons about getting the stomach reduction surgery. No, I'm sorry, wrong quote. Wrong quote. Christie said he learned valuable lessons about, quote, teamwork and leadership, end quote, while playing baseball and other sports. Apparently, when he was younger, even in college, he was quite the svelte guy, almost Adonis-like. I kid you not. Did you see him dancing on Jimmy Fallon last week with Jimmy to a spoof of, I forget the song, it was really remarkable. He did a great job. He's in khaki pants and a dress shirt, and he did a really remarkable job. Google it. You will be very thankful that I told you about this. So now all these lessons that Christie said he learned, he's used both in his academic career and his professional career. And he said, quote, "Unfortunately, some folks have been excluded from participating in sports activities for a variety of stereotypical reasons." Now, we all understand that, end quote, I should say. All understand that to be true and understand why. And we have scheduled a mother of a child with a disability to speak to later. We're waiting to hear from her. Now, the prime sponsor of the legislation in New Jersey's upper house was Senate President Steve Sweeney. That's right, Steve Sweeney. He's a Democrat from West Deptford, New Jersey. Now, this is very close and dear and personal to him because he, Steve, has a 21-year-old daughter that has Down syndrome. And she competes in Special Olympics as a member of the soccer team. Now, last Thursday, a week ago today, when Chris Christie signed this bill, he had members of the Special Olympics, Special Olympian athletes, I should say, by his side, flanked, because last week in Princeton, New Jersey, were the Summer Games, the National Summer Games. And Sweeney said that it never, never, never was about winning and losing. It's about competing. How true is that? You know, it makes me think of so many different things. Well, let me finish giving you kind of the layout of where it's going to end up or where it's going to move forward-wise. Exclusions-wise, in the bill that allow for schools to restrict a student with a disability from taking part in physical education programs. But in the event of these exceptions, the school is required to make a reasonable effort to provide the student with an alternative opportunity in an existing, adapted, or unified sports program. Now, with those few lines I just read you, I think that's going to be up to interpretation. And you know, when things are up to interpretation, they don't go well. But I'm hoping that this will be clarified much more clearly and succinctly so educators, teachers, athletic directors, superintendents are going to get schooled, educated, have seminars about this, because this is very, very serious. You can't have any anything left for subjectively or interpretation per school fluctuating. Now, it's really good timing, of course, as I mentioned, that the Special Olympics event, Summer Games, were held last week in Princeton, New Jersey, and those are such a huge games, and it's such a great event to be a part of. President of New Jersey Special Olympics, Mark Edenson, I've known him for many, many years as I do a lot of emceeing and hosting for Special Olympics New Jersey, and I could not say any more and more better or positive, more better, positive things. I've been up since 2:30 this morning, so forgive me, guys. it's a great organization, and I'm so happy that Princeton and New Jersey were able to host this season's games. And it reminded me of, like, the early start of Special Olympics. Eunice Kennedy Shriver, of course, was the founder, as I'm sure you well know, Special Olympics. And now, she started this basically in her backyard because she wanted to, this is back in the 50s, kind of recognize she recognized the unjustly and unfairly, how unfairly people with intellectual disabilities were treated. And she also saw that many children with intellectual disabilities didn't even have a place to play. True back then and true nowadays to a certain extent. So she decided to take action. And thank God she did, because here we are later, you know, 50 years later, 60 years later, Special Olympics is thriving big time. And one of her sons, Tim Shriver, has been at the helm for, I believe, over 17 years. And Tim Shriver was in Trenton last week alongside, or in a room certainly, in Trenton with New Jersey Chris Christie, governor. And he witnessed this. So I invited Tim to come on the show to talk about this really big milestone for, I think, obviously New Jerseyans, parents with children with disabilities, and more so for the other states. So it's my pleasure to welcome to the show Tim Shriver, Special Olympics Chairman. Hello, Tim. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
How is the heat down in D.C. today? Must be staggering.
It's a little sticky. It's a little sticky, but then again, it is summertime, you know?
Yeah, well, you got to love D.C., right?
Yeah.
So what did you think about when you heard about this news? I mean, this must have been like the fruition of much of your work.
Well, I think you're absolutely right. I think there's just a big sea change taking the country over, frankly. I think the younger generations are growing up with a sense of justice and inclusion that takes the whole idea of human rights and human dignity to a whole new level. These are kids that have grown up after the women's movement, after the civil rights movement, after these big social change movements rocked the country in a big way in the 60s and 70s. Those movements are still alive, still necessary, but this generation, I think, is much more intolerant of failure. They want everyone included. They don't want discrimination based on religion or race or sexual orientation or gender, and they don't want discrimination based on disability, and sitting right in front of their eyes, right under all of our noses, if you will, is an extraordinary example of discriminatory behavior in sports. We think of sports as though, obviously, only the best kids should be allowed to play. That's the culture of sport in this country, that by the time you get to be 12 or 14 or 16 years old, if you're not the best basketball player in your school, you quit, and you never play basketball again. If you're a young woman and you're not good enough to play varsity basketball in your high school, you quit basketball and you never play again. And that's just profoundly wrong. It's profoundly wrong to children of average ability who want and deserve the chance to play. It's profoundly wrong to children and young adults who have, let's say, intellectual disabilities like a person with Down syndrome or a person with autism maybe, to tell them that because they're not as good as the best basketball player in their school, they should be denied the chance to exercise physically, to learn a skill, to compete in front of an audience, to build teamwork, to understand victory and success, to be included as a potential letterman or letterwoman in the school's annals and history. I mean, it's just a profound injustice. And we saw this, you know, 30 years ago in this country with women. before Title IX, there was no women were not allowed to play sports. And everybody just thought that was normal, that the basketball team for a high school would be just the boys' basketball team. And all of a sudden it hit us, it hit the nation, that we were discriminating, powerfully discriminating, against half of our children.
And
women,
races.
Girls.
And races as well.
And exactly. And so all of a sudden, and now if you said to someone, well, we're only going to have a team for boys, you'd be put in jail practically. you'd be considered an absolute offender of the most basic concepts of human dignity. But we still do that to children and young adults with intellectual disability as though it was okay.
Now you raise
this bill changes that once and for all. It says once and for all that sport ought to be inclusive of people across a range of abilities and disabilities, that the days of saying no to a child with Down syndrome or no to a child with Williams syndrome when they get to high school and saying that you will never represent your school in sports, those days are over. And the Special Olympics future, the Special Olympics argument is that sport can change hearts and minds, can open minds to the inclusive and the dignity of every child, and that sports can be a powerful vehicle for improving school climate, as a social and emotional learning tool for teaching children how to be effective problem solvers,
how to
be collaborative. And we're preparing our volunteers across the state of New Jersey to storm the state and make the state into an example for the whole world. I mean, not just for the United States. But this is a message that needs to be heard in Latin America, in Africa, in the Middle East, in Asia, in Europe, and so on. And our goal is to start in New Jersey, build a model there that the whole world can come and say, ah, this is what it means to grow up in a unified generation. This is what high school experiences ought to look like for every child in the world. That's our dream.
Now, you brought up many, many valid points I want to react to, but one of them, one of the latter points you made was the fact that it kind of levels the playing field. And I think about the possible reactions by students without challenges, and I was thinking, and I'm always the eternal optimist, a realist but an optimist, and I thought about synergistically how this could really benefit the other students to see, okay, you know what, we all have challenges, and that's one of my things is I speak to students across the country, K through 12, college and more, about, you know, we all have disabilities, some are obvious and some are not. You know them, you're aware of them, whether you tell people or not. But, of course, we're talking about people, children or teenagers with adults with disabilities that are probably pretty obvious. And it's going to take some, you know, patience by other students to understand their limitations or their speed or the process or to run the bases, whatever the case may be. But it could really benefit them to really open their eyes, because how many people, students growing up and teenagers in America, are just so sucked into the vortex of entitlement? They have no clue, no touch of reality.
Well, I think that's true, except I'm a little bit more optimistic about our younger, about our young generation. I think there's a lot of narrowness and a lot of materialism and a lot of, you know, self-absorption. But I think there's also a huge amount of generosity. I think there's a huge amount of entrepreneurial spirit. There's a huge amount of willingness to open and change. I think this generation is kind of being raised in an environment where the new is important, where change is expected, where, you know, what is old is by definition almost unattractive.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we come to kids and we say to them, we want you to think differently about what a champion athlete looks like. And out onto the basketball court comes a 15-year-old with Down syndrome, dribbling his or her basketball and running the length of the court and you know, hitting a layup and turning to the audience with her or his arm stretched up in the air at, you know, 5 feet, 1 inch tall. And everybody will go, oh, my God.
It's great when you see this. Exactly.
That's the real deal. All along, I thought it was supposed to be LeBron James or Kobe Bryant, and they're fabulous. But that guy right there, he goes to my school, and he's a frickin' champion. You know, and I think Twitter will light up, and Facebook will light up, and people this generation will start to say, oh, my God, that's the kind of thing we believe in. We believe that if you've got guts in your heart, and you've got bravery, and you got your bold on, and you're turning your unified on, and you're trying with everything you got to do whatever you can do in your life, and you're being the best you can be, full stop, that's success.
And this can have great ramifications, Chairman Shriver, down the road, because it could change the landscape of our workforce. You know, we're teaching these children at a young age about inclusionary landscape and, you know, the workforce. I mean, this could really be a whole change of how we operate as a nation down the road.
I love what you're saying, because we sometimes refer to this as a revolution, a dignity revolution. Mm. People say, wait a second, you're playing basketball. What are you talking about revolution? And I actually think we're trying to completely turn upside down the whole idea of what matters most. I think too often we slip into a frame of mind that the smartest kid matters most, or the kid who gets the best score on the SAT matters most, or the tallest kid matters most, or the prettiest or handsomest kid matters most. But deep down, I think we know that's none of that's true. I think deep down we know bravery is what matters most. I think deep down we know openness and humility and dignity are what matters most. And I think deep down we know that courage and guts and compassion are what matter most. And I think our movement, led by our athletes, to be honest, are going to help people to see differently. And as a result, people will go, wait a second, that's right. I need that person in my office. I need that person at my factory. Mm-hmm. I need that person in my company, because that person is going to build the kind of culture that I want. That person is going to help us build teams of motivated employees. Person's going to inspire us to have the best radio program in the country.
Along with their indomitable spirit.
Yeah. So, I mean, isn't that what every business wants? Indomitable spirit, a motivated workforce, team building, a sense of creativity and energy that's unbridled, the chance to make mistakes and still be valued. I mean, that's what our community tends to bring in enormous amounts and qualities, and so sports is this very powerful classroom of the heart, if you ask me. It's a very powerful classroom. It's not just about winning and losing. It's not just about teamwork. It's not just about dribbling with your left hand or kicking with your left foot or hitting a backhand or a volley. It's about learning to value the goodness in each of us for our movement. And I agree with you 100% that when this bill becomes law and as it becomes implemented across the state of New Jersey, yes, there'll be an enormous awakening of people with intellectual differences who can find themselves belonging. But the greater awakening, if I can be so bold as to say it, will be from the non-disabled community who, as you say, will start to see that disability itself is an anachronism, that we all have different abilities. That we have to remove from our eyes the blinders that label children as disabled versus normal. That normality is itself a horrible idea. Nobody wants to be just normal. Everybody needs to be themselves.
Absolutely.
So our athletes are going to teach lessons in schools in New Jersey that no teacher, and I was a teacher for 15 years, they're fabulous human beings, enormously gifted and committed, but no adult teacher can teach what that 15-year-old playing unified basketball for his or her school can teach. No administrator can create a school climate the way a 13- or a 14-year-old playing striker on a soccer team can build a school climate. Nobody can do what they can do in terms of awakening us to the giftedness of every person. So I just think it's historic, it's exciting, it's challenging. But in a way, it's just going to sweep the state, and people are going to go, oh, my God. They're going to look back 10 years from now and say, I can't believe there was ever a time.
What a terrible model.
Yeah.
Now, Tim Shriver, do you think, obviously, you're surrounded by countless parents who have their children or child or had their child or children in Special Olympics, and that's a great environment. It's safe. It's nurturing. It's supportive. Now, have you spoken to or gotten any feedback from parents who maybe have trepidation about them actually having their child participate in sport in the school setting, not so much in the Special Olympics and or both, but having to be worried about the feedback and how they're going to be treated?
Yeah. Well, I think there is enormous fear of bullying, of humiliation, of being made fun of. That exists everywhere mm-hmm. where our community goes. But I think there's a great gutsiness now, too. I think a lot of parents are saying they want their children to be seen and valued for who they are. They're just asking the communities around their children to be as good as their kids are.
Well put.
Their kids tend to be very open, very willing to take risks, very trusting, they're asking the communities in which they're going to school, the administrators, the other students, the faculty, to be as good as their children. And that's what we're trying to do here. We're trying to make the world as good and as open and as accepting and as brave as so many people with intellectual disabilities and their moms and dads have been for generations. In a way, this is the fulfillment of a mother's and a father's vision. I mean, our movement was started in 1968, our first games, and it was largely fueled by passionate mothers and fathers who'd been fighting for decades to keep their kids out of institutions, to keep their kids out of the closet, literally, to allow their kids out the front door. And they said, let's try sports. Maybe sports will change the hearts and minds of the nation. In New Jersey, we celebrated that after 40-plus years, the Special Olympics movement that was launched by those moms and dads, not only changing the hearts and minds of thousands of people, but now beginning to change the laws, literally change the law to say inclusive sport, unified sport, sport between children with and without intellectual challenges together on the field must become the next platform for building a more inclusive country.
When all the celebration calms down, we deal with the reality. This takes place 2016?
Well, we hope it starts. I mean, it's underway already, okay. But yes, it rolls out. We're looking for support from teachers and administrators and volunteer networks. But yeah, it'll start. I mean, you know, some of this will be kind of let a thousand flowers bloom. There's, you know, schools. I think some schools will hear about this, and hopefully some will hear this radio broadcast. And some principal will say, I want to be on the cutting edge of this thing. I want to be the first school in such and such a county. I want to be the first school in the city of Newark or in the city of Jersey City or some of these other big cities. We want to be the place where this gets rolled out first, and they won't wait for funding, and they won't wait for regulations, and they won't wait for the law. And that's the greatness of America. A great idea comes from the community. It reaches the political power structure. But then the community owns it even more.
Then the pioneers take it, and off they go. Absolutely. So what problems or aspects do you see that possibly, as an educator yourself for years, a person who obviously knows the law and I'm sure read the bill through and through, what do you foresee possibly that would need to be kind of sussed out or maybe be just more clarified down the road? Because obviously we don't want anything to be left out for interpretation.
Right. Well, I think there's a lot of logistical challenges, like anything. You know, it's easy to say, let's fill the gym and put the teams on the court, but that requires coaches and transportation and uniforms.
Money.
And schedules and, money, but, you know, volunteers. Mm-hmm. And it requires information and communication and all that kind of stuff. So there's a lot of work that has to happen. But I don't think there are, to be honest with you, I don't think there are gigantic problems, roadblocks. I think there's a lot of work, but if there's one thing we've learned in Special Olympics is that when people are given the chance to do something good and meaningful and participate in something bigger than themselves, they'll break down brick walls to do it. You don't have to, I hate to say it, but half the time you don't have to tell them how to do it. You just tell them, here's the vision, and then you get out of the way. So I think there's some challenges here, but this bill is as much vision as it is law, and I think we got to get out of the way and watch great teachers, great coaches, great physical educators, great administrators, great school boards, great superintendents, great young people, great teenagers
do their thing.
Hear this and go, hey, wait a second, my school doesn't have it. Let's start it. And then they knock down the door of the principal and say, Principal Smith, Jones, we're here to tell you we want a unified team in our school. And the principal will say, wait a minute, I never heard of that. Or wait a minute, I haven't seen the law. Wait a minute, we don't have the funding. And the kids will say, we're doing it anyway.
So I imagine high on your to-do list, Mr. Shriver, is knocking on senators' doors across the nation and saying, hey, follow suit.
Follow suit, not only across this nation, but around the world. You know, Greece, we hope will have a similar piece of legislation soon. They're interested in this. We want to take this idea to the UK and Ireland, to China and India, to Singapore and Egypt and Lebanon and South Africa and Malawi and many countries around the world. There are Special Olympics programs in 180 countries, and they're all attuned to this. They're all excited about it. They're all asking for copies of the bill. They're all trying to knock on the doors of their respective ministers and provincial governments and national governments to say, let's not be left behind. Let's not be guilty of discrimination. Let's make this the law in our states and countries, too. So You know, who knows where the governor's future is? Who knows what Senator Sweeney's going to do next? But, you know, they may just have to end up on the speaking circuit going around the world talking about the power of this piece of legislation if they don't fulfill whatever their next political ambition is.
We all know one of their ambitions. Exactly.
This is social change, too. You know, if you can't, if you don't get the office you want, you may just get the mission you want. So we welcome them both, and especially Senator Sweeney, but also the governor. Just move this thing through in typical New Jersey fashion. They saw it, they recognized it was the right thing to do, and they got it done. The best of New Jersey was on display there at the bill signing ceremony. I think Democrats, Republicans, the legislative and the executive branch, getting something done, getting it done quickly, and getting it done in a way that's going to make a difference.
So when you left there that day, a week ago, Mr. Shriver, what was flooding your mind, like, that the fruition of your mom's work has really come to reality?
Well, it was partly that, yes. I think my mother believed in possibility, you know, and I don't think she ever could have imagined that bill, but she believed that
Fantastic.
If you give people a vision, great things will happen. But I have to be honest in saying that the real thing in my mind was just the enormous...
How the hell do I get out of New Jersey fast enough?
Huh?
How do I get out of New Jersey fast enough?
Not at all. We had a blast there. I wish I could have stayed longer. I think the real thing that was in my head, though, was just the extraordinary opportunity of the future with
sure.
young people empowered. And the simple thing, I mean, this is not expensive. A basketball, a soccer ball, tennis racket, you know, a set of sneakers. These are things this country can afford to use as tools of social change. We can make this happen. I mean, I'm just thinking to myself about all the kids who are sitting in the lunchroom alone, about the ones who are made fun of when they walk out of their school, about the moms and dads who today in New Jersey and every other state around this country are worried about whether their child will ever get invited over to a birthday party or ever included in a dance or ever joined at the movies with another peer. And I'm thinking to myself, all that loneliness, all that isolation, all the fear that separates those kids from one another, those with and without their different abilities, wow, what a difference we can make.
Absolutely.
That's what was really on my head.
And I have to say to you that as a... person with a permanent visual impairment, obviously I'm no teenager now, but when I was in high school, there were a lot of sports I couldn't do, extracurricular, but even in gym class, I mean, it would be the bane of my existence to have to go on a softball field or soccer because, you know, I was just so worried about not being able to compete, and a lot of times I couldn't, and, you know, I held my own because I wasn't a small guy, and, you know, I didn't really take much flack, but, you know, I just think about, okay, now, if this were me nowadays...
But the thing is, you could compete. Of course you can compete.
Yes.
Nobody says if you're a slow reader, you should stop reading. Nobody says if you don't do calculus, you shouldn't learn math.
Absolutely.
But that's what we do to kids in sports. Mm-hmm. We say if you can't dunk, you shouldn't play basketball. It's ridiculous. Play against somebody your own ability level and have a blast. Get in shape, learn the skills, practice hard, have the fun of a game, win some and lose some. Learn and meet friends, build relationships to last your whole life long, and play. It has nothing to do with whether you can slam dunk, whether you can hit a three-pointer. It has everything to do with the joy of the sport.
The opportunity.
So it's we've got to get the elitism out of sports. We've got to get the elitism out of our culture of play and physical activity and recreation. And we've got to get the bullying out, the mockery
Absolutely.
Of the kid who drops the ball. Put that kid who's not quite as good at catching the ball on a team with other kids of similar ability. Give them a coach. Make them better. Let them play. Cheer them when they do well. Challenge them to do better. And let's create a more unified future.
Chairman Tim Shriver, I have to plant a seed in your head. You probably thought of something of this caliber already, but, you know, if we got the NFL, the NBA, any large sport organization behind us to get, you know, the superstars, the Chris Boshes of the world, to make PSAs, to get, you know, traveling to schools in the off season to promote this, that would be incredible.
We're working on it. But
see
if
that?
If Chris Bosh is online too, transfer him over to me and we'll sign him up, even though he's on the Miami Heat.
I hear you on that. But actually, Chris Bosh is a friend of the family, believe it or not, so we can talk offline about that.
We'd love to have him. He like so many other people in the NBA, are terrific people. They want to do the right thing.
They really
do.
We
hear about all the guys that make a mess of their lives, but we don't necessarily hear about the good folks.
Good heart.
Who are willing to give their time and energy to make a difference. So we welcome a lot of those folks. We've Dikembe Mutombo's on our board, Yao Ming's on our board, Sam Perkins is on our board, hundreds of NBA, Major League Baseball, hockey, football players. They understand men and women in tennis and golf from many different countries. Michelle Kwan, the great skater, Scott Hamilton, Bart Connor,
wow.
Nadia Comaneci. These are world-class
impressive
athletes.
Yeah, absolutely.
They've given thousands and thousands of hours to this mission, and we need more of them. And I think we can not only, as you said at the beginning, help a lot of kids and young adults with intellectual challenges, but we can help make the world a little bit more of a tolerant, a little bit more of a welcoming place, and God knows the world needs it.
You've done so much at the helm of Special Olympics for, was it 17 years?
A lot of years.
A lot of years, okay.
It's a lot of fun. That's the good news. I have the best job in the world. But thank you very much.
But very quickly, Mr. Shriver.
To your listeners.
Very quickly. Now, as a producer as well, you've done a lot as well. Front of the Class, the Loretta Claiborne story, The Ringer. Now, I could see something actually transpiring in the future about this movement itself.
Well, the Loretta Claiborne story is about Special Olympics.
Mm-hmm.
The Ringer's about Special Olympics. But if you got a screenplay that helps to frame this unified future, send it my way.
I think it's in store. Well, I greatly appreciate your effort. I mean, your family's dedication to public service. Even your brother's organization, Best Buddies, will benefit from this.
Which is doing great work in schools, and we're just trying to match their commitment to the kind of friendships that make a difference with the kind of games that can do the same thing.
Chairman Tim Shriver, thank you so much
for
your time and a great work.
Okay, thanks.
All the best to you. This is PRN.FM. My name is Mark Farrell. That was Chairman Tim Shriver, actually, calling in from D.C., who was in Trenton last week for the legendary, iconic signing of the bill that will allow students with disabilities, intellectual disabilities, to compete in sport. Now, this is a phenomenal day. I mean, you heard all the great words and stories that he shared, Mr. Shriver, and I couldn't echo those any better because I've been, walking this earth for many, many years, had my fair share of challenges being visually impaired, and suffered, not being included. And it takes its serious toll on you. And so now when I think about it, this is so exciting that students in New Jersey, and hopefully in other states to soon follow suit, will have this opportunity. And when I started thinking about this, I started thinking about parents. Now, if I had a parent with a child with a disability, intellectual disability, I think my first thought would be, wow, this is great. This is fantastic. So on the other side of this, I'm going to give you some thoughts of, the reality of having a child with a disability, being able to compete on a level playing field, or maybe perhaps not a level playing field. That's next on PRN.FM. It's the Progressive Radio Network, PRN.FM. If you like, it's short and sweet. I always like initials. I used to go by MF on the FM until I realized it sounds really bad. Corny. Love to hear from you. 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. Let me try that again. 4888. Been up since 2:30, and I'm feeling it, man. So I got a few emails here, but I'd like to hear from you. If you want to call in, 888-874-4888, from parents with children with disabilities. That's what we're talking about today, because New Jersey Governor Christie signed into law a week ago today. New Jersey schools are now required to allow students with disabilities to sign up for and take part in extracurricular sports activities. That is a big movement. That's a huge change that the education system, persons like Tim Shriver, chairman of Special Olympics, have been working on for many, many years. And so the fruition of the work is coming to reality, which we're very, very happy about. I know a lot of families that have children with disabilities, from young children to adult children. So right before the break, I was giving you my input, and I'm going to get to somebody's question in a moment, but giving you my input about myself having a visual disability and how difficult it was for me to compete in sports. And Tim Shriver, who was on the show a few minutes ago right before the break, who graciously gave his time to us to shed light on certainly the signing of the bill, which he was present for in Trenton last week with Chris Christie and many Special Olympians that were taking place in the Special Olympics Summer Games, the National Summer Games in Princeton, New Jersey, that this is just an incredible time that we have to really kind of embrace and to take this movement and really steamroll it out, because, as he was saying, there isn't much involved into this. I think it's more of the education aspect. You know, for soccer balls, basketball, tennis balls, et cetera, that doesn't cost nothing. But educating people, the educating the educators aspect. And more importantly, realizing that, you know, there are going to be certain situations that it's not always going to work. So thinking about this in a macro sense, going back to my experience, I was thinking, okay, now there are times where I made a team and I quit because I felt that, I felt, first of all, embarrassed because I couldn't see the soccer ball, couldn't see the basketball. In basketball practice, there would be so many different basketballs flying around, I couldn't track which one was going to be headed my way. So I got, you know, pretty scared and got clobbered in the face a few times and got a few bent noses, nosebleeds, etc. And it was hard. So I was really self-conscious. So I ended up, what? Quitting. Of course, I made up some excuse in eighth grade. My skills were adequate, maybe sub-adequate at the time, but certainly the coach saw something in me because, not that I was short, but I'm 6'3 now, but I was kind of on the average side, maybe a little bit above average, thinking, okay, we can develop Mark Farrell's skills, and when he gets to high school in another year or two, you know, he could be a starter and maybe make it into JV, whatever, you know, however coaches think. I'm sure that's their long-term goal and help them win a championship or two on the way, of course. But that wasn't my case because I never felt comfortable because I was always worried about, first of all, my performance. And again, as Chairman Shriver said, you know, that shouldn't be the case. We should focus on the ability and the fact that whatever you do, win, lose, it's about the competition and having fun. The outcome, of course, would be nice to win, but we know there's not always winners. Ask the Miami Heat. 2014, they didn't win. Paid a lot of money for that. So there's always winners and losers. And the important thing is that students will now have the capability with intellectual disabilities to have, I hate to say equal footing or equal playing ground, but more opportunity. That phrasing works better for me, more opportunity, because it's going to take time and there's going to be a lot of bad scenarios, I'm sure, that will unfold. So I got an email from a parent here that said, you know, their first thought was like elation, sheer elation that their parent, I'm sorry, that their child of 15 years is now going to be able to play because they're in a mainstream high school with other students. And he has Tourette syndrome. So after the initial elation faded, she got concerned, okay, how is this really going to play out? Will he be made fun of more so than he is now? What will the sensitivity be of his peers, the other classmates, of the teachers? Maybe they're going to be bringing in other teachers or non-faculty people to coach these extracurricular activities. I'm not sure because it's so new, it's so embryonic that, you know, a lot of this has to be written, clarified, and I have not read the bill, only what's been printed in the media. So it's interesting to find out as the future unravels what will take place. But I totally understand being a parent of two young children, healthy children, knock on wood, thank God, we're very, very lucky. But if I had a child with a disability, how would I feel about this? Again, I'm sure I would be totally psyched because I would think about the things, all the things that I was not able to do or personally decided not to do because I didn't want to put myself at risk for embarrassment, failure, ridicule. I mean, those are all rational aspects that even children without major physical disabilities, intellectual disabilities, they all worry about. I mean, adolescence is a brutal stage. Teenage years are brutal. So you put all this together and, you know, it's not an easy thing to tackle. But I would say to parents that this is a great opportunity for you as a parent to even excel in your parental skills, to further develop the confidence of your child, to make them feel that, yes, you will be able to strive and get better at whatever sport. And maybe you win. Will you win a championship? Perhaps not. Maybe you won't come home with a trophy. But the fact that you're out there playing will do wonders for confidence, self-esteem, and they'll develop some friendships. And hopefully not too much nefarious activities will happen, mockery, etc. You know, don't have to put that into perspective because that's ubiquitous, it's everywhere. So I say that to parents because, you know, as a parent myself, that's what I would do, living with a disability now and have been in those shoes for many, many years. And still to this day, I'm in a restaurant and pull out my magnifier because magnification or contact lenses or glasses don't help me. I just wear magnifiers. And people say to me, what, are you blind? Yes, I am blind. No, if I was blind, I wouldn't be using a magnifier, you jerk. Anyway, so it's a great time. Chris Christie, we applaud you. You can close the bridge down, but you can also sign one hell of a bill when you need to. We take our hats to you, and we say to the other states, the other countries, the other continents, follow suit. Great things are in store. Please reach out to me if you'd like me to speak at your kindergarten, elementary school, high school, college. MarkFarrellMotivation.com. I speak about overcoming adversity, anti-bullying, drugs and alcohol, mental health, and more. That's Mark Farrell, F as in Frank, A-R-R-E-L-L, motivation.com. Special thanks, as always, to Giselle, Casey, and Jason, whatever you're doing today. Enjoy, my friends. This is a great time of the year. Happy 4th of July. And to all the graduates of 2014, go out and live life and kick some ass. My name is Mark Farrell. Enjoy your day.